This
Hi,
is
Bunny.
Hi. Hi, I'm so excited to be here with everyone. Thank you for having me and thank you for the meeting. This is great. Okay, so this is Chapter 5, How It Works, out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's on page 58. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this. Men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunate. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thank you so much, Bunny.
Thanks, Bunny.
And for our traditions, I've asked Tina from Pennsylvania to read the traditions for us.
Everyone, I'm Tina Burns. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tina.
I'm actually in Ann Arbor, Michigan, but I got sober in Pennsylvania.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. Here's the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based upon attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much, Tina. And then I'm going to read the theme for, it's funny. I'm going to read the theme for this conference. Our conference is called Fellowship of the Spirit. And it is comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to our prayer chair, Cynthia, who's going to read the step one prayer for us.
Thanks, Mark.
Hi, everyone. Cynthia, I'll call. Oh. Thank you, Mark. Step one, I admit that I am powerless over my addiction. I admit that my life is unmanageable when I try to control it. Help me on this day to understand the true meaning of powerlessness. Remove from me all denial of my addiction. And I'm going to pass it along to Ashley to do the reading now.
Hey guys, my name is Ashley Patzner and I am an alcoholic. Just before we get started, we do have a couple announcements. We ask that if you are able to contribute Seven Tradition to GSO, we will post the links in the chat. And then also all these recordings will be made free on recoverytapers.com. I will be reading from XXVIII. Out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. It is my great honor and privilege to introduce Lexi A. from Bismarck, North Dakota.
Hey guys, my name's Lexi Archambeau and I am an alcoholic. Oh, I'm grateful to be here with you guys. It's interesting. It's like as soon as I came into this meeting room, it's like I know I'm with my people, right? And I can feel the presence. I want to thank Ashley and the committee for asking me to speak. It's always an honor and a privilege to show up anywhere in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that saved my life. It's a beautiful program, and I'm extremely grateful to be here on this Saturday morning. Generally, about 7 years ago, I'd be waking up with a heavy hangover, and I wouldn't be up yet. It'd be about 1 or 2 o'clock when I'd be getting up. So this is great. Just to get started, I do have a sobriety date. That's April 21st of 2013. I have a sponsor. And my sponsor has a sponsor. I've been brought up in extremely strong sponsorship. And I'm forever grateful for that. And I'm forever indebted to that woman, or that woman who saved my life. And I do have a home group. It's the Happy Destiny Big Book Study. We meet on Monday nights at 7:10 here in Bismarck, North Dakota. We are on Zoom right now, so if you want to hop onto that, you're more than welcome to. We have a couple of facilitators who take us through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous line by line and page by page as we've been taught. I'm extremely, extremely grateful to be here today. I'm on a committee for a WIPA here in North Dakota, and this is our second year going strong. And it's been a fantastic committee, and we've shown up the way we've been taught, right? And we incorporate the traditions, and we incorporate the steps, and we show up. But I've never actually had the privilege of being to any other WIPA. But however, right about now, all my memories on Facebook are showing up for Gopher State. I miss that conference. If any of you Minnesota Cats are on here, it's a phenomenal conference. And I miss you guys a lot. So to get started, there wasn't, my upbringing isn't much different than anybody else's, maybe a little bit different actually, as we all are a little bit different in that aspect, so to say. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My parents divorced when I was about 5 years old. My mom has been sober for about 30 some years. And my dad's a very active alcoholic, and I have 3 sisters, and all of them, 2 of them have been to treatment, and 1 of them has inquired in AA. The last time I got to do this, about a couple of weeks ago, my sister was in that room, and she was with us, right? And what you guys have taught me is that there's nothing I can do for my family, but I turn them over to the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what I've done. And she got to sit in that room with me that day. I think I was crying within the first 2 minutes, but that's what you guys have taught me, right? So I grew up in this household. I don't remember a lot from my childhood, and I'm quite convinced that's because I was never present, right? I was always living in these ideas that if I had this, I'd be happier. If I had a dad in my life, then maybe my life would be a little bit better. If my family had money, then I'd be happier, right? And I was never present. I was always living in these ideas of if I can get this and if I can get that, I'm going to be okay. And so I wasn't present throughout my childhood. I remember that very specifically, and I remember a lot of fear and a lot of fear of what you think about me, but I couldn't let you know that, right? So from a very young age, I'm learning how to show up in your life. And what that means is that I can't let you see me, and I can't let you see what I'm feeling or how my life is going. So from the get-go, I have this wall built up, and it's simply to protect me from you, because I'm quite convinced you're gonna hurt me, and I don't know what that's gonna look like, and I'm not willing to participate in that. Hi, Terry. So I lived my life from this way from a very young age. And in about 5th grade, I got caught with cigarettes. So that was my get-go into private school. My mom took me to get some uniforms for private school, and that's how I found out. And I went in there, and I'm really good at conforming and complying. And I started showing up and being who I knew you wanted me to be. Right. And so I didn't know my life was going to look like that from a very long time. I'm that chameleon we talk about in the Big Book. Right. I learned who you want me to be, and I show up in that way, and I live a double life. Right. I'm showing up this way, and I'm showing up that way, and no one knows who I really am, and neither do I. So I got put into this private school, and the thing about me is that I find my people immediately. Right. Geographics don't work for me. I find my people. Right. And I did. About 9th grade, I found the people who were going to introduce me to alcohol for the first time in my life. And they did. And you know, in about fifth grade, I had a drink of beer. I forgot to mention that. That was my first drink. I had a drink of beer, and it was warm Coors Light that my friend's dad had set on the counter. And I took a drink. I went and sat on the couch, and I waited for the effect to hit me. because for some reason, I came up with this idea that alcohol was going to do something for me, right? And I was really excited to see what it was going to do. And I waited for the effect, and nothing happened, and I was extremely mad. So in about ninth grade, I went to a party, and on our way there, we had a bottle of Kharkov vodka, and we started taking pulls from the bottle. And the effect was there, right? It was that warm sensation and that feeling of I have arrived. Because from this point on in my life, I needed a drink, right? I didn't know how to show up in your life. I didn't know how to be okay in my own skin. I didn't know how to talk to you. I didn't know how to breathe, right? And as soon as I take that drink, it's I have arrived and I have found my people. And I did. And I didn't know that I was going to continue on for that for a very long time. I got a boyfriend that night. That didn't help, right? It was like, game on, let's go. And so it was, you know. So I immediately had consequences to my drinking, and I was 14 when I took my first drink. When I was about 15, I got caught with that minor in consumption. And by that point, I'm drinking every weekend. I'm smoking weed every day because I can't drink every day without it being noticeable, right? And the thing about me is I'm an alcoholic from the get-go, and I have to have something within me, and it doesn't matter what it is, but I need it. So I get my first minor in consumption. I get put on Little League probation at the police youth bureau. And my mom comes with me, and she says that she thinks I'm doing other things. So they start UAing me for every appointment I go in for. And the thing is that I was, right? She's a smart lady. She's done what I've done. And I go in there and I fail every single UA this lady gives me. And on my last UA, I had taken a cleaner to clean out my system. and I go in there and she knows and she looks at me and she says, Lexi, I've never seen anybody like you and there's nothing I can do for you. And externally, that's a badge of honor, right? I'm unique. There's something different about me. What is it, right? And on the inside, I'm absolutely dying because at this point, I've got big dreams and I've got big goals and I'm going to do big things with my life. But I've never been able to live up to them. Right? So on the inside, I'm dying and I know what I'm doing is wrong, but I can't stop it. And this is the beginning of it, right? So to my friends, I wear this as a badge of honor and I leave that appointment that day and I ask my mom to take me where I need to go to get what I can get. And she, like any good mother, says no, right? And I, like any good alcoholic, do what I have to do to get what I need. So I open the car door and act like I'm going to jump out. I wasn't going to, right? My sponsor still uses that against me. She tells me to stay in the car. And so I do, right? So my mom says, okay, she's going to do this. And she pulls up to the St. Alexis Hospital here in Bismarck, North Dakota. And I get checked into the psych ward for 3 days. And as the big book talks about, I'm not honest with any doctor, right? I don't know how to show up honestly, even though I know I'm dying. And I go in there and I get diagnosed, I think it was oppositional defiance disorder, because I'm not honest, right? And had I been honest, it would have been alcoholism, right? And so from that point on, you know, I leave there 3 days later. And from that point on, I start my rounds with treatment. I'm a treatment baby. I love treatment. I think around 6 months sober, when I started seeing the insanity of this thing, I asked my sponsor if I could go back to treatment, right? because I love it, right? I'm a treatment baby from the get-go. I think from the ages of 14 to 15 to 19, I went through 12 treatment centers. And that was my mom trying to save the life of her daughter, right? Of the daughter that she loved and cared about. So I went into my first outpatient treatment center. And I went in there and I sat there with my arms crossed and I slouched down in my chair and I acted as if I didn't belong there because I didn't believe I did. And the family day came around and it was another woman's family day and she talked about why she drank, right? And she said she drank because she could dance on tables and be okay. She could talk to people and be okay in her own skin, right? She could be whoever she wanted to be and show up in life as she wanted. And that rang a bell in me, right? And I raised my hand and I said, that's why everybody drinks. What are you talking about? My counselor at the time was a recovering alcoholic and he said, Lexi, no, it's not. And I left, I left that group sobbing because I knew I was an alcoholic. But the thing about me is that knowledge, self-knowledge is insufficient. Right? I can know I'm an alcoholic to the depths of my being, but unless I do something about it, it doesn't matter. So I went through many other treatments after that, and I started my rounds, and so it was, right? I wasn't capable of passing EUA. I wasn't capable of not drinking. The only time I was able to get sober is if you locked me up. And I continued on probation, and I continued this journey with alcoholism as we see it, right? And around the age of 17, my friends were starting to die. And it appeared as if they were dying. You know, I had a friend who committed suicide, and on his death certificate, it said death of asphyxiation, right? And what I knew is that he died as a result of this disease. And we started dropping like flies, right? Because that's what this thing is it's life or death, and we treat it as such. So I came in, I went to my last treatment center, and I came out of that treatment center, and that day I got into a relationship. and you guys know how that goes, right? And he had been sober for some time, and I came out, and he suggested I get a sponsor, but I wasn't about that, right? And I went to the candlelight meeting that night, and I left the meeting early to go smoke a cigarette outside. And this lady followed me because that's what you guys do, right? You follow me. and she came outside and she said, I'm going to be your sponsor. And at that point, I'm still terrified of what do you think about me and what is going to happen if I say no. So I say yes. I'm not very interested, but I say yes. And at some point she left and she moved to a different town. And so her sponsor became my sponsor. And that woman got me to step three. Right. And I wasn't willing to do much else after that, but she taught me the truth of the disease of alcoholism. And I went back out because I wasn't willing to do the work that you guys have taught me out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back out and I lived in this idea that if I could just get past the pain of the relapse, I'd be okay. Right. If I could just get past that pain. And it continued to get worse, as you guys know. And at that point, you know, I was off probation. I had a job. I was a supervisor. And if you didn't know me, my life looked okay from the outside. But if you knew me, you knew that I was dying. And I was absolutely spiritually and emotionally bankrupt. And I moved, well, I didn't move. I went to a different city to drink the way I could drink, and I stayed with a boy that I met in treatment, the treatment boyfriend. And I stayed with this boy, and I would wake up every morning with immense fear, right? And I knew I had to get what I needed. And if I could just get it, I'd be okay. And I would, right? And on April 20th of 2013, I left that city. I got what I needed, right? It was 420. I went and got it. And on my way home, I had let some, tweakers take my car the night before. You guys know who you are. And I had let them take my car the night before, and it was like falling apart, right? Like the dash was like all like open, and there was wires exposed, and I'm driving down the interstate, and something falls off the front of my car, and I'm emotionally and spiritually bankrupt at this point. Right, there are no other consequences in my life other than this. And I've got no friendships, and I've got nothing. And I call this lady who got me to step three. And she was an attorney at the time, and she came, and she got everything I had on me, and she threw me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what that looked like for me, you know, my sponsor is an extremely strong, brave woman, right? And she's been brought up in AA the way it is, out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So she threw me into the steps immediately. She got me a home group. She got me a commitment at that home group. She threw me into district. And I got a position in district. She threw me in, right, head deep into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was willing at this point, right? And I don't know what changed. And I remember that day, it was as if neither option sounded good. right? Neither option I was okay with. And it was like, I can continue on drinking as I am, or I can get sober. And I couldn't imagine either. And I wasn't interested in either. It was like I was dying inside and I wasn't willing to make any of these decisions. But for some reason, my actions started reflecting a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And so she threw me into the steps. And from the get-go, we started traveling, right? It was like we were in Las Vegas and we're going to Minnesota and we're going to all these conferences all over the world. We're going to California. And then all of a sudden we're going international. We're going to Scotland. And we just got back from India. And I was convinced that when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, my life was over, right? I was no longer going to have fun. I was going to become some church girl, right? I was going to be bored the rest of my life. And that was on my fourth step. You know, when we do the fear inventory, I was terrified of becoming a nun. I wasn't willing to trust God at that point in my life, right? So she taught me the honesty about step one. And that was that I have an allergy to alcohol, right? That every time I put it in my body, there's a light switch that turns on. I don't know what I'm going to stop or what's going to happen and where I'm going to end up. And my life had reflected that, right? It was like every time I put alcohol in my body, I'm coming to from blackouts and cops are surrounding me and I don't know what's going on, right? Or I'm coming to in my bed and I've puked in my sleep and my mom's coming in and she's questioning if I'm dead or not, right? And I'm tired of living this life. And then she taught me a little bit of honesty about the obsession of the mind, right? That as soon as I put the bottle down, I obsess about it until I go back. And I didn't know these things, right? And it doesn't necessarily come to me like that. It's like, oh man, the obsession's there, right? That's not how it portrayed in my life. But how it looked was I'm sitting in a 9 o'clock meeting. And the idea starts coming to me that I haven't seen my friends in a really long time. And I bet they're wondering how I'm doing. And I should probably go see him because I'm doing pretty good and I should probably show him that, right? It's a Friday night, so I show up at the party and I'm going to show everyone how good I'm doing, right? And then all of a sudden the idea hits. Am I an alcoholic? Yes, no. Yes, no. And it's mental warfare going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And finally I start to bring it out externally and I start questioning you guys because I'm with my people, right? Am I an alcoholic? No, 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 you're not, Lexi, and the game's on, right? And what this book tells me is that the main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind, right? That there's something living within my thinking and it's my disease. And then if I don't address this, I'm screwed, right? If I don't address this, if I'm not watching my thinking, this disease shows up within it, right? And that's what you guys have taught me. So my sponsor took me through the steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so it began, right? I was 19 when I got sober. I think I was the youngest person in sobriety in Bismarck, North Dakota. I had come to these rooms before, right? I had sat in the chair. I had taken up some space when I was about 15. And I listened to you guys and I wasn't willing to participate or get a sponsor, but I sat there and I listened. But by that point, something had changed and I was willing, right? I was willing to do this thing. So my sponsor started taking me through the steps as outlined in the book, right? And when I started to see the reality of step one, that I had a disease that was going to kill me, when I started to see the hopelessness of that cycle, that as soon as I put the drink down, I obsess until I go back. And as soon as I pick it up, I can't stop. I started to see the truth of that, right? I started to see that I was going to die of this thing if I didn't do anything about it. And so I became willing and I ran towards the rest of the steps. I asked Ashley to read that paragraph, or those two paragraphs, because I think it centers it up, right? That I drink because I like what alcohol does for me. That's it. I've got a lot of excuses. It's graduation. My friend committed suicide. My boyfriend broke up with me and got into a new relationship. I've got a lot of reasons and a lot of excuses as to why I drink. The reality is I like what alcohol does for me and the effect it has on my life. And the thing about me is that I don't have an honest bone in my body. I don't know up from down or left from right. My sponsor made that very clear to me when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can't see the truth. Right, I'm convinced of this idea that If I can get it to be the way it used to be, when it was fun, when it was the party, when it was good, then I'm good to go. Right? This idea that I can somehow control and enjoy it. And the thing is, I've never been able to. But I believe this idea that I can. Right? I'm delusional. I don't know true from false. And then as soon as I get sober, as soon as I put that drink down, the restlessness that you're building, the discontent. Right? Bob D says it perfectly. And I use this analogy a lot because it sums it up. That I'm restless. I'm like a dog trying to find a spot to lay. Right? And I'm going in circles and I'm going in circles and I can't find that spot. It's like nothing is comfortable. Right? I'm consistently trying to change it up and where can I go and who can I be and what can I do? Right? And then there's this discontentment in me. Right? The shine of everything wears off immensely fast. Right? And it's like I get the new car and all of a sudden it's the wrong interior and I need a different one. Right? I get the new guy or girl, whoever it may be. I get the new guy and all of a sudden he's not the right one. Right? And I need the next. And there's this discontentment in me, right? I'm trying to change it up. I need a new job. I get the new job. It's the honeymoon phase and we're good and it's fun. And all of a sudden it's not the right one. No one's doing what I think they should be doing, right? And then there's this irritability in me that I either withdraw so far into myself that I'm debating and going and getting a new medication that I know I don't need because I've worked with steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and it's become clear that I don't suffer from these things, right? But I'm debating going to the psychologist and getting on a new medication because there's something wrong with me inside, right? Or I start to lash out on you guys, right? So there's this restlessness, this irritability, and this discontentment that as soon as I put this drink down, it starts showing up in my life very clearly. And I either have one of two choices or alternatives, as we say, right? They're no longer choices. My actions are already reflecting what my decision is, right? I don't have a choice. What are my actions saying today? So I have one or two choices. I'm going to work this program to the best of my ability with my sponsor as outlined in the book, or I'm going to go back out. And like I said, it's alternatives, not choices, right? It's like getting on an escalator and I say I'm going to stand there and I know I'm going down, right? So these things started showing up in my life real quick. And the thing about me is I'm a pretty stubborn alcoholic and I was 19 when I got sober. And I grew up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as you guys know, growing isn't always fun, right? But I grew up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor taught me. And at the time, as I said, she was an attorney and she was practicing from home very often. So she had a lot of time for me, right? And I would go to her house and I would sit in her office and she would be working on some legal things and I would sit on the floor and I would do my step work, right? And I would stay there and I would just stay, right? We stay. And she allowed me to do that, right? That woman saved my life and I'm forever indebted to her. And the thing about her is she's an attorney and she's a defense attorney. And had I had some charges when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that would have been a real nice thing for me. I didn't. But she's a good attorney. And she started using that on me. And how that looked in my life is she would start asking me questions, right? Have you prayed today? Real simple question. Right. And the thing about me is I'm like in the middle zone. Right. I'm like, well, you know, I had this come up. And then I've officially entered the stand. Right. I'm on stand. And she looks at me and she says, yes or no. Right. That's how I've been brought up. Right. Yes or no. Simple yes or no. I don't want anything else. Yes or no. And she started holding me accountable to my actions and she held up the mirror. And the thing is I'm quite resistant to that. Right. I don't like to look at me and I come in here as a victim. But she taught me that everything was within me, right? And when I started to see that problem, when I started to see the truth, when I started to become willing to believe in a higher power, when I started to see the insanity of my life as I had been living it, the insanity of my very own thinking, right? The insanity of my actions, when I started to see that I could very well do what I was doing drinking in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it terrified me. Because the thing about me is that I like to set this program down, right? When things get good, when I start to get comfortable, when I start to get happy, I like to set this thing down and do what I want to do. And that doesn't show up well in my life, right? And that restlessness, that irritability, and that discontentment starts to come back up. And there was one point in my life where I chose to set this thing down, right? Where I'm going to one meeting a week, where I'm really talking to my sponsor because I'm extremely resentful at her, where I'm not willing to take any action, right? Where I start to become stubborn in this, and my disease starts to poke its head up. And this is where the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, right? The relapse starts way long before I pick up that drink. And it starts in my thinking. And I start to see this, and I start to see the resentment coming up. I start to see the selfishness, right? The dishonesty of the life I'm living, that double life, right? That I like to have some reputation on the outside. I want you guys to see me as this way when I know in my heart that's not who I am, right? Because my actions don't reflect that. And you guys taught me to look at my actions. My actions will determine what I believe in. And I called this man one day, and I called him bawling because I said, I'm going to go back out. I am going to drink, and it's happening soon, right? Because at this point, I'm going to bars and I'm dancing. And he lives in Minneapolis for you, Minneapolis crew. And he said, Lexi, it takes more courage to show back up in those rooms than it does not to. And so I did, right? And so I did, and I called that woman, and there's nothing like doing a 4 and 5 on your sponsor with your sponsor, right? but I'm willing to, right? Because nothing in my life can come before this thing in my relationship with God, or I'm screwed, right? And so I did. And I became willing once again, right? It's like that jumping off place that the book talks about. That I become willing to either do this thing or to go back out. And those are my alternatives. There's no other choice within this, right? And so I did. And at that point, right, and I think that was around 18 months of sobriety. At that point, I had put myself back in school. But the thing about me is, it's like I am like completely powerless in all areas of my life, right? Not just like when it comes to alcohol, but I don't even have the power to be who I want to be, right? I don't have the power to be a good person, right? I'm incapable. And unless I have some type of relationship with God, unless I'm doing this thing, I start to become the woman that God would have me be, right? And the minute I set this down, like I said, it gets ugly. And at that point in my life, I had put myself in school. But I wasn't willing to do it. So I quit showing up. Right? And at 18 months of sobriety, I failed out of college. Right? Because I'm not willing to do this thing. Because I'm not willing to work this program. And my life, once again, is becoming consumed with external things of what's going to make me okay and what's going to make me happy and how can I fulfill this. Right, this external void in me, my life is unmanageable. And so I start to see the insanity of it as it is. And like I said, I got thrown back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor, you know, she's one of the most beautiful women I've ever met. I mean, she shows up, right? She's in the trenches, right? She comes out with mud on her face and we start doing 12-step calls and we start doing all these things and she's teaching me the traditions and she's taking me through the steps and I'm in these district meetings and it's like warfare in the district meetings, right? It's like bombs going off and people are arguing and it's not always a pretty sight and she's teaching me the traditions through her experience. And man, I start to fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I'm 19 and I'm on fire for this thing. And I'm excited and it's like, okay, let's do this, right? Let's do this. And we go to California, we go to Covina, California on, I think it was the 501 or 502 club, I can't remember. And they have like 6 a.m. meetings every day. We didn't have that in Bismarck. And they have 6 a.m. meetings. And there's like 100 people showing up at this club for this 6 a.m. meeting, which wasn't the case in Bismarck, North Dakota, right? And I come back and I'm like, let's do this. And we start some 6:30 a.m. meetings here in Bismarck. And then we start this big book study, which is my home group. And we're starting these meetings and we're going to these places and we're having fun and we're excited about AA. Right? I didn't think this was possible, especially at the age of 19. Right? And then I get to experience my 21st birthday in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm convinced that I should be on a party bus somewhere far away with some friends and we're drinking, we're having fun, we're doing all these things. But I'm starting to get the internal benefits of this program. Right? I'm starting to get the spirituality, a relationship with the God of my understanding. I'm taught honesty, right? I'm taught that I'm no longer a victim in my life, that every day I have a choice, that anytime I'm disturbed, it's got nothing to do with you, and it has something to do with something going on inside of me, right? These basic instincts, right? Anytime I'm disturbed, it's got nothing to do with you. And then I start to become responsible for my life as it is, right? Because the thing is that when I'm a victim, I'm waiting for you to change, right? And the thing is that I don't have the ability to change you. And if I'm waiting for you to change, then I'm screwed. I'm never going to be happy. I'm never going to be joyous. I'm never going to be free. So I'm learning these things, right? And I get this internal freedom, right? That I can experience anywhere at any given time in my life. And there's nothing I'm willing to trade for that, right? And that's a direct result of working this program as it is. Not as I want it to be, but directly out of the big book, right? Line by line, page by page, direction by direction. It tells me exactly what I need to do and exactly the benefits that I'm going to get from that, right? And I'm taught that there will be consequences in my life, good or bad, right? Some that I like and some that I don't like. But what do my actions say today? You know, I've been brought up with some of the best teachers that you can ever find, right? Like these people who do this thing, right? Who truly do it and live it. And they teach me. And I'm not always good at showing up, right? I'm not always good at doing this thing. You can ask my fiance, right? Like come into my home and ask them how I really show up. And I'm not always good at it, right? But today it's like I have this life that I never dreamed possible for me. I'm a hopeless chronic alcoholic of the hopeless variety, and it's not pretty, and I'm in blackouts, and I'm doing things that I don't even want to think about, and I'm being a person that I don't want to be. And I never dreamt this possible, right? But there's something about this program that once I start living it and once I start putting into my actions, my life changes, and it's inevitable if I do it, right? It's a promise. And just as it's a promise of this way of living, right, the promises, there's also other promises in this book that I don't like, right? There's promises that I'm going to get resentful, that selfishness is going to show up in my life, that fear is going to show up. But what does that look like for me today, right? You know, it says, you know, like I said before, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. So on a consistent daily basis, I'm doing step 10s, right? Because if I don't, I'm going back to that girl who's failing out of school in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going back to that girl who's restless, irritable, and discontent and it's coming out of her skin. So I watch my thinking today, right? And today I can say that my relationship with God is the most important relationship in my life. That I'm not willing to let anything come before that or stand in between that. Whether that be resentment, fear, selfishness, money, right? My biggest sign that I'm starting to get spiritually sick is I'm showing up at the car dealership again, right? Like I need a new car. And it's like every time I'm at the car dealership, my sponsor knows something's going on. I think I did that actually like two weeks ago. I'm like, catch me with a new car, right? because I like to change things up, right? I like to seek outside to make me okay, right? And I'm constantly reeled back in. It's like, all right, Lexi, let's reel you back in, right? So this program has immensely changed my life so long as I'm living it as I've been taught, right? And so long as I do, and so long as I show up, I get to live a life beyond my wildest dreams. And on a consistent daily basis, it seems as though I'm brought back to step one, right? There's a second part to it. My life is unmanageable. And that's in the rooms of AA, as I've said, right? Catch me at the car dealership. And the thing is that we're always going to be human, right? I'm always going to be human. And so long as I do this, I'm okay, right? But there's a lot of mistakes I've made in this thing. And there's a lot of mistakes that I continue to make. and it's on a consistent daily basis that I can take these steps and I can bring them to a much, much deeper level in my life over and over and over again, right? And I can do that with step one over and over and over again, right? It's like I come to this new surrender, this new jumping off place of some area in my life. And recently that's been with my sister, right? She came into the rooms of alcoholics not too long ago, and the woman took her in, right? And they took her in, and it's like I'm like standing on the back bench of it, like, are you going to meetings? Are you working the steps? Are you meeting with your sponsor, right? And I want to do these things, but I've been taught otherwise, right? So it's a new area of my life that I get to surrender to, right? My life is unmanageable, and I want peace, and I want freedom, so I'm willing over and over and over again to turn these things over, to look at the truth of it as it is, right? That anytime I'm disturbed, it's something within me, and what is it? So as long as I do this thing, as long as I continue to show up, I get the results of this program, right? And I know that life will come knocking on my door. And the thing is what am I doing? What do my actions reflect I'm doing? So I want to thank you guys for asking me to speak, and with that, I will end. Thank you.